We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to the show. The Hornets have made some moves in the last week, but just last night, we found out who our new superstar is going to be, Bowles. I don't even know what his first name is. He scored 18 points, had 12 rebounds. He was dominant in that game. So what do you say, Bowles for our new center for the next 50 years?
Yeah, let's start a Bowles movement right now.
I mean, 19 minutes, 18 points.
Yeah.
Dude's a beast.
Yeah, 1.5 points per shot. He got an assist. And if you're listening to the commentators, apparently four assists in summer league is the equivalent to 12 in a regular NBA game. So by that math, he had the equivalent of three assists. I don't know. I'm trying to sell it here. But, 18 and 12 for Bowles.
I mean, the guy had a nice game. But, you know, Donatas Montiejunas of the Rockets had like 28 points in one game, and the next game he had five.
Yeah, no, our guy is impressive. He just won't bowls you over.
Oh, no. All right, so we've got some stuff to talk about. A bunch of stuff has happened since the last time we had this podcast. But we do have one piece of business I wanted to get to first. This is for all of you listeners out there. We're going to ask you to do a favor for us. We've been doing a bunch of things to try to expand the site. We want to do a site redesign this summer. We have Joe Garrity out at Summer League and at the Olympics trials before that. We have a whole bunch of things planned, but they're not exactly, you know, free. So we do have some idea of things we want to be doing with the site. We've got some T-shirts that are going up as soon as I get the people to approve one of my images that I really like. And we're also looking at finding a sponsor for the podcast. So, of course, most of you are probably cringing at the moment. What that means to you is that whenever they do advertise on the podcast, there will be a little brief snippet at the beginning that says this podcast will be sponsored by so-and-so. And then you'll have to listen to me for about 30 seconds somewhere in the hour and 30 minutes of our podcast talk about the particular sponsor, hoping that's not too odious for you. But in order for us to be able to land this deal, we need to have some demographic information. And so if you go to our website and you select this podcast, you will see a link there to a survey done by Wizard Media, who is selling the podcast to the advertisers. It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things for you to complete. There's no personal information that identifies you other than your email address. They do ask for that. I hope this is not too much to ask, but if we need to get about 200 people to fill this out, and we can roll with this. So I'm actually kind of excited about the sponsor we might get. So please help us out with this.
Yeah, and I hope they do go to it. Honestly, in your whole speech right there, all I heard was odious, and I focused in on that because you used that word in the last podcast, and I had to go to my Webster's dictionary to look it up. I was felt a little humbled. So now that you said it again and I know what it means, I felt kind of accomplished. But, yeah, if people could fill that out, that'll be good for us in the site.
So hope you guys do that. But – back to the Hornets 24/7 part of this podcast, which is, since our last podcast, Eric Gordon has had his contract signed and then matched by the Hornets. We did not go after any of the prominent amnesty candidates that there was some word we might be going after. And if we did go after any of them, we don't know about it. And we didn't definitely win any of those. And we've had Summer League games and Team USA games since then, where players of ours have been in competition. So what would you like to talk about first, Michael?
I guess Eric Gordon. I was pretty bored the other day at the gym. I actually went back and listened to our All Eric Gordon podcast. And it's pretty funny. A couple of funny things to hear about back, thinking about it back then. Seemed like both of our worst case scenarios kind of played out. It's hard to tell whether this was our worst case scenario or him just signing the qualifying offer was the worst case scenario. I think both of those scared us. There's also a point in the podcast where you had the harebrained idea of having him traded to Phoenix, but laughed it off saying that, you know, Eric Gordon would be insane to want to go there. Those were your exact words. He would have to be insane to want to go there. They're losing Steve Nash. They're going to just be a horrible team. Gordon would be insane to want to go there. But yet he did, and that's where his heart is. But it was just funny listening to that. I would suggest it in retrospect if you have an hour to kill. But yeah, I think now most Hornets fans, I'm trying to sell myself on, on this being a good move, but you know, I just being objective, it's honestly hard to sell myself on something that I know at the core just doesn't feel right.
So I actually don't have a whole lot of trouble selling myself on it. Objectively, like you say, it was actually kind of worse than my worst play out, because not only did he ended up being signed for the maximum for us, big contract, lots of risk there, but he also managed to, you know, alienate half of New Orleans while doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, this was not a well-executed free agency period for him. However, well, I guess it was because he got his money. But it's not hard for me to talk myself into this, because I can always just say, well, if he plays most of the season, he's really good. And then suddenly it doesn't feel so bad. So I guess there's always that. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't mind paying him the max if he plays, say, 75 games a year over the course of it. Do you? Would you mind that?
See, the way that I could sell myself, the way that I best sell myself is to kind of lump this big four in. So in my mind, there's a clear big four, at least potential-wise and probably production-wise, on this Hornets team that is the core of this team. It's Anthony Davis, it's Eric Gordon, it's Ryan Anderson and Austin Rivers. Those are the four guys that are locked up for the next 4 years. They are the four most talented guys on the roster, have the four highest ceilings. And if I could look at them as one person and combine those four guys are set to make an average of like $30, $31 million over these next 4 years. If I look at it that way, value-wise, then it's a little easier for me to swallow Gordon instead of looking at him as, you know, just in and of his own. I mean, there's a on ESPN.com, we actually asked this question, you know, a couple of months ago, never really got back around to it. But remember when I asked you what, you know, Anthony Davis would be worth on an open market, a free market, you know, both to the Hornets and just as a team, you know, as a player? Bradford Doolittle, who writes for ESPN, kind of did this, and his answer was over the next 4 years, Anthony Davis with projected warp would be worth about $126 million. I mean, it does sound a little crazy, but I guess my thing is that is Eric Gordon worth 4 years, $58 million? I don't see any way that happens unless, like you said, he plays 90% of the games. But I think that there's a high, high probability that Anthony Davis outplays his contract by 200, 250%. So that's the way I'm selling myself, is I'm looking at those four guys as one.
Right. So, and did you notice that Eric Gordon was actually watching the Summer League game?
And tweeting about it and all.
I know. He's working. Yeah. He's trying to get back into your good graces.
He's working, or somebody's working for him at Twitter account, because – yeah, he's more active yesterday with regard to talking about Hornets games, activities, whatever, than I had seen the whole year combined. So somebody's in his ear whispering the right things.
Yeah. So hopefully this – I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm really hoping that this all turns out really nicely. But, hey, at the very worst, this isn't like a Gilbert Arenas kind of contract, at least. It's not, I guess, in your world, an Emeka Okafor kind of contract, where you're not going to be able to trade it if you need to.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because I find this fascinating. The Hornets have – so, I you know, I was watching. I was trying to get myself excited about Eric Gordon. So, and again, I don't think he's a horrible player. I just don't think he's worth $15 million a year. But I'm trying to get myself excited, so I'm watching that game-winning shot against the Suns. And my first reaction was the commentator goes through the five guys on the court. He says, all right, on the court is Vasquez, who was in that day for Jared Jack because Jack was suspended. You know, Vasquez, Gordon, Ariza, Carl Landry, and Okafor. And I'm going, you know, wow, these, you know, that's a professional lineup. That's not a 20-win lineup, you know. And I'm thinking about it, and Carl Landry's getting no interest on the open market. A reason Okafor got traded for the worst contract in the NBA, Jared Jack got traded for a bag of peanuts. You know, there's really nobody on this roster that apparently anybody in the NBA, you know, values as anything more than a C asset, if that. And yet when Eric Gordon was playing for the Hornets, they, you know, they won 60% of their games. I mean, if he is healthy, I guess how good of a player, you know, could he be? If we're always bagging on him for the injuries, but if we're going to be optimistic here, you know, what level of player could he be?
Well, this is part of you know, I love my stats, so I could throw those at you if you like. I was planning on doing this eventually anyways. So Eric Gordon in his, and again, this is such a small sample size saying this is kind of stupid, but in this last year, when the Hornets played, they averaged like 99 points per 100 possessions, which is very bad. I think the league average was like around 103.6 or something around there. Good teams usually average about 108, 109. I think the Spurs last year were at like 108.2 and they were the top. So when Eric Gordon played, the Hornets had an offensive efficiency scored basically while he was on the floor, 109.3 points per 100 possessions.
Right.
So he had that big of an impact on our offense, which is really hard to look at because his individual numbers over those nine games weren't fantastic. I mean, he had some nice scoring games of 20, but he wasn't super efficient. He didn't shoot well from three. But he, you got to remember what he did in those games was he was just a wrecking ball, and people were always scrambling to cover him, and he was breaking down the defense. So Eric Gordon has the potential to be a chaotic force against a team's defense that will help the entire team. So when he plays, he's quite frankly amazing, even though he doesn't do everything you'd want him to do.
And that's just the talking about the offensive side. To add to that, when Coach K, Colangelo, some of the other people in Vegas were asked about, you know, Eric Gordon and how close he came to making the team, they said that he was far and away, and this is a team with Iguodala, Bryant, etc., the best individual defensive player in that camp, a perimeter defensive player, that defensively he looked amazing. They just decided to go with Harden's offense. So you're talking about all that, you know, all those offensive numbers. You know, Gordon is a two-way player. He doesn't have the size maybe necessarily, but, you know, we've seen him be able to cover both positions, both backcourt positions. And
you brought up that Phoenix game. I remember him hounding Steve Nash in that game.
Yeah, he
like on the most important possessions.
Right.
He was drawing that assignment.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I've always said with this Austin Rivers thing is that, you know, people worry about if that's going to work out, but on the defensive end, I'm not worried because, you know, very few teams have two good guards, and Gordon, you know, will be able to check the other team's best guard. But yeah, I'm already starting to think about what, you know, when we do that big season preview, what my prediction is going to be for Hornets wins. And honestly, I think it's that big of a deal with Eric Gordon. I think the Hornets could win somewhere between 55 and 58% of their games that Eric Gordon plays, and somewhere around 25 to 30% that he doesn't. So that's going to be how I figure out my season prediction. Is I'm going to, you know, calculate how many games I think he misses, and then I'm going to go with those numbers. I really think it is that big of a difference for a team that, you know, loses by, what was it, 3 points a game last year?
Yeah, and I mean, that's people are probably thinking that kind of thinking is crazy, but I mean, in the NBA, the margin of victory is really small. So you only need a player, like one player, if you're an average team, one player has to be like 10% above average, and you're winning probably 60% of your games easily. So yeah, it's one of those things that one player can have a huge impact. And of course, you know, I mean, there is the fact that last year he was replacing Bellinelli, which was a massive bump up. But anyways, Bellinelli, I haven't heard anything about Bellinelli. Have you? I don't know. There's that rumor that he was going to be signed and traded. But of course, I was like, why would we sign and trade him for anything that was mentioned in this article? And of course, nothing ever happened.
Right. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's another guy who just, you know, we're starting to see that. The Hornets from last year, there was one guy who has any value around the league. Maybe Jason Smith will, and I guess Ion was a nice little trinket for Orlando. But, you know, those veterans that the Hornets had, looks like they were lucky to shed him, which brings us to kind of this week of moves and non-moves outside of Gordon. I guess to the move, we almost had like a Ryan Mike Stradamos. I mean, it's crazy because there's 700 players in the league, approximately. I don't know.
What?
Aren't there?
Try 450.
No, I meant 700 including D-League. But anyway.
Okay.
So, sorry, there's 450. I'm thinking football. I got football in the brain. But there's probably more than that. Whatever. So there's 450 players in the league. And if you listen to our podcast last week, at the end of it, the only trade I throw out is Vasquez for Darrell Wright. You counter with Jack for Darrell Wright. I mean, 450 players in the league. These are the trades that you and I, you know, kind of pull out of our butt. And a trade of that ilk almost went down. I mean, it just involved another moving part where Jack goes to Golden State and Darrell Wright goes to Philly. The Hornets get basically $5.4 million in cap room and a you know, a European big that'll never play over here. I guess what were your initial thoughts? What have been your thoughts since you've had a little time to think about that trade?
Well, I was, you know, I'm a huge fan of Jarrell Wright, actually. So I was kind of hoping he'd make his way here. But, I mean, so Jack was a big part of this team. He's a big leader for the team. He's an incredible cheerleader off the bench. He is not as bad as a lot of people make him out to be offensively. I don't find him to be the point guard like a lot of people seem to hate him as a point guard. However, his numbers, advanced numbers, are pretty poor, so I wasn't sad to see the back of him. Were you? I mean, I know you really liked him as a leader for this team going forward.
Right.
And we don't really have that anymore.
And I think we'll talk about that more in a little bit. I guess I wasn't surprised. It seemed like the feedback, both from some writers on our site and also people on Twitter, was that, you know, how could we not get anything for Jack? I mean, you're the one who usually thinks Hornet players are worth more than I do in trades. Were you surprised that the best the Hornets could get for a guy who, you know, had an above average PER, is not declining, he's still towards the end of his prime, and, you know, had one of his better seasons last year, were you surprised that the best they could get for him was essentially a salary dump? I mean, would you have guessed a second round pick at least, or?
Actually, yes. I mean, I think we got less than we could have, but I think there was some time sensitivity there.
Yeah, see, and I don't. I mean, Aaron Brooks just signed today for 2 years about $6.7 million.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron Brooks is going to make $2 million less than Jarrett Jack. I just still think there's a lot of guys out there who, you know, like I said, the free agent market was going to happen. Yeah, the first 10 guys signed for mega amount of money, but now you got Carl Landry of the world, Aaron Brooks out there, Elton Brand getting picked up for $2.1 million. I mean, this is where the value comes in. I was actually kind of shocked that somebody would take, you know, that big of a contract for an average. I mean, I think you could have got Jarrett Jacks out there for half the money at this point in free agency, so.
So here's – I'll just put it this way. I think the best you could have hoped for Jarrett Jack was a late first-round pick from a team that was – if you were trading like at midseason, for a team that was making a push for the playoffs and their backup point guard wasn't cutting it or had become injured. So like a team like last year, Oklahoma City, they would rent him for half the season, you know, if like Eric Maynard goes down again.
Right. But
maybe OKC isn't the best choice, but something like that. I think it's the best you could get.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised they didn't get a second rounder out of somebody for him. But to me, I mean, you got to look at it this way. You're trading him away so for the ability to make sure that you have cap space to bring in better players.
Okay, so that kind of brings us to the next point of what was interesting about this week. So as the Hornets do that trade, it's still at the point in time where Eric Gordon has not – where the Hornets have not matched yet. So the Hornets have about a two-day window where they had $10 million in space, you know, and as soon as they match Gordon, that shrinks by about $4.5 million. And I think – I just think with that much space at that much time, knowing that it's going to shrink once they match Gordon, you know, at least I expected that the Hornets to be, you know, for them to be aggressive in that window. And all we see is a very minor trade that I don't want to complicate too much for people. Basically, the Hornets paid $800,000 to $900,000 for 2 second round picks that'll be probably in the late 40s, early 50s. But they don't take advantage of that window where they had a large amount of cap space before they had to match Gordon. Were you surprised by that, or you know, do you think that there's some other plan that maybe we don't see?
No, not anymore. Not after what we've seen in the summer. I was on board with you. I really thought they were going to be aggressive, pick up maybe a player or two, jam them into that space, and then match. And I don't see that. That would be a plan, as if they felt like they were going to be trying to contend this year for a playoff position. But every move that they've made this offseason screams that they're not doing that. I mean, they've traded, as much as you say that Ariza and Okafor and Jarrett Jack don't have really any worth around the league, they are still veteran players that would help you get to the playoffs compared to other young players who may have a higher ceiling. Like, for example, I'm of the opinion that having Jason Smith start at center, which I expect actually to be the way we start this season if it's not Anderson, Okafor would actually help us get to the playoffs more than Jason Smith will over the course of a year. Not a lot, but he will. But moving all of those guys, dumping all that salary, clearing all that space, and not purposely not bringing back anybody to fill those voids screams that Dell Demps wants one more year where he's going into the lottery and hopefully picking up a talent.
Yeah,
that's what I read from every movie made. And that what you read from that is he didn't see anybody, and I don't see anybody, that he wanted to fit into that $10 million who he thought was really going to help them out long haul without ruining that plan.
Yeah, I didn't think that he was going to add players. I thought something where he would have added a bad contract and got a pick for his troubles type of thing. You know what I mean?
Mm, okay.
But
yeah, I could have seen that. But how many of has that? Have you seen any of those kind of deals go down?
Yeah. I mean, but to be fair, not a lot of teams had cap space to do it. I thought right. He was in a unique position where, you know, he could have went and been a part of some Orlando trade where, you know, nobody wanted to take back Chris Duhon, and Duhon has a year left. So he takes on Chris Duhon and gets a second round pick, which will probably be pretty good next year for his troubles, and did that two or three times, you know.
But I
think you're right. But I mean, to me, what's interesting about the Jack thing then is that, you know, he's not using the space now. Jack would have been an expiring contract, so he's not a big. I think the phrase this summer the GMs are using is he doesn't move the needle, you know, to the point where he's going to put the Hornets into the playoffs by himself next year. What do you think, you know, if Rivers is the point guard in the future, which we'll get into him more later, but by all the comments from the Hornets coaching staff and Demps himself, they're grooming him to be the point guard of the future. Why do you think that they chose Vasquez over Jack?
Because Vasquez is cheaper and better than Jack.
So he's better right now?
I think so.
Okay.
You don't think so?
I think Jack got a lot of flack. Didn't mean to rhyme, but I think he got a lot of flack for his last 3 minutes of games last year.
Right.
I think he was very good for the first 45 minutes of a lot of games.
It's true.
So yeah, I mean, he was forced to do. I mean, he was the anti Chris Paul. He was great, you know, in the first 43, 45 minutes. And then he was also asked to close, and he's not a closer. I think if you take the first 45 minutes of games and Gordon would have been there with him and Gordon could have closed out, I think people would have had a complete different viewpoint of Jarrett Jack. But because he became the closer when he's obviously not fit for that, people have all the memories of, you know, his missed shots or turnovers at the end of games when he should have never been put in that position in the first place.
Right. Well, let me actually take back what I said. I do think Rivas Vasquez is better than Jack. I don't actually think the perception of that is in the Hornets. I don't think the Hornets saw Vasquez as a better player than Jack. What I think, and I think you might have been actually angling at this, Austin Rivers is going to be a work in progress. And if you have Jarrett Jack in front of him and you want to go ahead and say, well, hey, let's give Austin Rivers some time at the point guard, starting point guard, you're basically ruining your ability, your relationship with Jack at that point. Jack is the starting point guard. There is no one who's going to, especially not Jack, who's going to accept the fact that Austin Rivers, a rookie who's never played point guard in his life, should get a starting nod over him for any length of time. Vasquez already comes off the bench. Vasquez expects to come off the bench, I have a feeling. I think Vasquez feels right now he can win that starting spot, and I think he should win that starting spot, but there's not going to be an explosion if Austin Rivers come next year, or even at some point during the summer, they experiment with Austin Rivers coming off the bench.
So you're saying if Jack had to come off the bench, there would have been an explosion?
I don't think there would have been an obvious explosion. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. All right, well.
Yes, there would have been a very quiet, unseen explosion.
With Jack off the bench. Okay. All right, so, I mean, the Hornets have obviously made that move. And before we get to Austin Rivers, Summer League, another bit of news. Blake Griffin gets hurt. We obviously never root for injuries, you know, even though everybody had a great time blasting the Clippers and it seemed like the Clippers were the most hated team this year. That's the politically correct thing to say, is we never root for injuries, so I'll preface it with that first. But Blake Griffin goes down with an injury. Anthony Davis steps in, plays one exhibition game so far. I think their next one is on Monday. Hits a three-pointer, four-point play, 9 points in 9 minutes. You know, overall, I guess overall, do you think there's going to be a huge difference either way? Let's say we have two different realities, one in which Davis would have played Summer League this year, and another one where he plays in the Olympics. You know, do those two paths differ greatly, and what do you see coming as a benefit of him getting to play with Team USA?
I would love to sit here and say the Olympic experience is going to be infinitely better for Anthony Davis. I think as a confidence, it may, but I don't think there's going to be any real difference in learning the game and playing at an NBA level between him probably riding the pine for most of the time for the Olympics team and getting lots of minutes in Summer League. I really don't think there's that much of a difference. I mean, he'll be able to practice with the best people, be exposed to the best people, see what that kind of environment is like, have some sort of those relationships built, but he's not going to get the minutes. I think that actually equates to getting lots of minutes, playing with a whole bunch of pretty poor teammates against some pretty poor opposition.
Yeah. It'll definitely make a difference for our boy Bulls. He gets a chance to shine. No.
Right. Without this move, Bulls was not part of that team.
Can I just say that, you know, people talk about Anthony Davis as if he's a project on the offensive end. No. And Andre Drummond, who airballs two free throws in Summer League, he's a project.
Right.
A guy who is almost 6'11", could step out and hit threes, has a beautiful stroke on his free throw, only missed one because it was slightly long, but it was dead on target, you know, who has a nice putback. I mean, he's not a project on the offensive end. He will get better over his career like everywhere else, but, you know, people act like he's this huge project that's going to need a ton of work on the offensive end to even be somewhat serviceable. And that's just not the case. Watch Andre Drummond. That's a project. Anthony Davis is a guy with plenty of skills on the offensive end.
Yeah. So, I mean, before, I loved every minute of his 9 minutes in that game. Just loved it. I cackled when he hit that three-pointer and got fouled.
And looked over to Calipari, who my wife is like, wait a minute, how is he coaching the team? I had no way to explain it to her. And then today, or, you know, what was it? We were watching some other game with Brazil or something, and she pops off with, what, is Jeff Van Gundy coaching that one? And I didn't know how to respond. But anyway, yeah, he looks over to Calipari and kind of says, see, I told you should have let me be shooting those all year. It was a great moment.
And, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm still disappointed in Chris Paul leaving. But that whole – they had a picture on ESPN.com of you know, Durant and LeBron and Chris Paul leaping up. And I mean, Anthony Davis had to have felt so freaking incredible at that moment with those guys jumping up to grab you. I mean, that's what I mean by the boost in confidence. Having those guys rooting for you and wanting you to succeed, and then if you're able to do it, that's got to be an amazing feeling.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how many minutes he's going to get. I think he'll get a lot of garbage minutes like that. I still don't think, you know, he gets minutes in real game that against Spain. I know that Spain has a couple of bigs, and Team USA's you know, really small now, and you would think that maybe he would get some minutes there, but I still don't see it. I don't think he gets a lot of minutes in close games, but he's going to be at all those practices. He's going to be around Coach K, some other great basketball minds. So I think it'll definitely help, and he and Rivers will have plenty of time to work together, so I'm not worried about them not developing a chemistry. But I think, you know, I definitely think it'll be a good experience, and I think that he'll definitely be a fixture, a major component on the team in 2016.
You do realize that I have already seen several people suggesting that he should be our small forward because he made that shot.
Now, I will say that I don't think it, and I said this, you know, a long time. I don't think it's insane that he defends some small forwards.
Yes.
I mean, how many good small forwards are in the league? You don't, I mean, are you worried if he was isolated against Sean Marion, would you be afraid?
No.
Right.
Can name a small forward you, he would be afraid if he was isolated against.
I wouldn't love to see him against Durant, but this is always the point, is that nobody could single cover Durant.
Right. I mean, like Durant, you can say Durant and LeBron, but really, I mean, does it matter if we put him on them or Al-Farouq Aminu or brought back Ariza?
Yeah.
They're going to kick the crap out of
us. Am I afraid that Danny Granger or Lou Aldang are going to make him look stupid? Not really.
Right.
So
right.
I think it hurts a little bit having him. I mean, I wouldn't be afraid he couldn't cover them. I'd be afraid having Davis away from the basket, depending on who the guys down low are. But I don't think that he could play small forward on the offensive end. But
I will say this, though. If we don't bring anybody else in at small forward, so Al-Farouq Aminu and Xavier Henry are basically our small forwards going forward, it wouldn't shock me at all if we ended up rolling in crunch time at some point with a lineup of Austin Rivers, Eric Gordon, Anthony Davis, Jason Smith, and Ryan Anderson.
Yeah, and that's where...
Would that be our best five?
Yeah, the Hornets coach of the Summer League, I know I'm gonna butcher his name, James Baraggio.
Okay. You don't expect me to try to correct you.
Okay,
dude.
I'm sorry. But when he was asked about Ryan Anderson, I don't know if it was a slip of the tongue, if he was mistaken, or if he was referring just on the offensive end, but he referred to Ryan Anderson as a small forward, and you and I both know that if that's their plan, that's a nightmare, at least on the defensive end. Yeah, I could see a situation in which Davis is covering the small forward on the defensive end, and you know Ryan Anderson is playing the small forward role on the offensive end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to be. It's going to be interesting how all these moving parts go together. But, yeah, just this idea that Davis is this ultra-raw offensive player is just, you know, it's not anywhere near correct. There's raw rookies coming into the league. Davis isn't one of them. He's obviously has a lot to improve on. But
So just based on what those 9 minutes of U.S. Olympic basketball against a horribly overmatched Dominican Republic team, I will state this already. Anthony Davis is already a better basketball player than Tyson Chandler.
Wait a minute. A better... So if you had one game to win today, you would take, and you could have either of those guys,
mm-hmm.
you would pick Anthony Davis.
Is it a team game, or is it a one-on-one game?
It's a team game. You're building your team. And that's your...
I take Anthony Davis.
Wow. All right. It's pretty...
I mean, Tyson Chandler, Maybe one-on-one would probably shut down Anthony Davis. I don't know if Anthony Davis could score on him. I don't know if Dyson, that might be like the longest basketball game for someone's life ever. Not that these happen all the time or anything, but I mean, neither of those guys would ever score probably. But if it was a team, I think Anthony Davis has more versatility than Tyson Chandler.
Wow. All right. Yeah, I'm the guy who in January said he's going to be one of the top 10 players of all time, and I'm shocked by that statement. So,
because Tyson Chandler, I mean, I think it's always funny when people talk about the Hornets back in the year 2007, and they talk about, you know, how David West was the second best player. Tyson Chandler was the second best player on that team.
Yeah.
Not going to let slide. Tyson Chandler was. Anthony Davis is better.
Yeah, and one.
That's right. So before we get too carried away with Anthony Davis, over 9 minutes of USA basketball against, like I said, a terrible team. Let's go to Austin Rivers. So your boy, Austin Rivers, 31 minutes, played probably, wouldn't you say, about half that time as point guard and half the time off the ball?
On the offensive end, I say about 90% of the time he was playing point guard.
I thought that one kid, Roberts, played point guard for most of the time he was on the floor.
That kid's a he had the ball in his hand because he doesn't – he was glued to it. I don't know if you call that point guard, but we're getting into –
And we're calling him a kid, and he's 27 too, yeah. By the way.
But, no, that guy's a chucker looking for his moment to shine. But I mean, Rivers was covering Nolan Smith. I mean, people are playing up this matchup between Lillard and Rivers, but Rivers was barely on Lillard, you know, that night. But Rivers had the ball, I guess, outside of point guard. He had the ball in his hand on offense more than anybody else on the team. He was the one controlling the tempo, controlling the team, mm-hmm. setting up the offense.
Right. He and Xavier Henry had probably most of the touches, except for our boy Bulls.
So before we get to me, what were your general impressions as far as, okay, when I look at somebody like, I don't know, give me a shooting guard in the league, just a pure shooting guard.
Ray Allen.
Okay, when I look at Ray Allen, to me there's no question what position he plays. I can't see him as a point guard. No, he just doesn't have that fluidity, doesn't have the control of the bat. I mean, he does a lot of things exceptionally well, but that's why he's a shooting guard. Just watching Rivers, if you had never seen him before, never seen him play before, the way he moves, the way he dribbles, the way he handles the ball, what would you classify him at just by your eye test?
By the way he handles the ball?
Yeah, I mean, just you've seen a lot of point
guards. He could be a lead. Absolutely, he could be a lead.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of point guards in the league. You've seen a lot of shooting mm-hmm. guards. Just which one does he look more like? Just the way he – forget shot selection and all that right now, but just the way he moves and handles the ball.
So, well, I mean, you're, as a pure ball handler, he was the best player on the floor, period. He's better than Lillard, who left the ball behind a few times. I would say he's the best pure ball handler on the floor last night. If we're talking passing, though, he was off the mark. People kept having to reach back to grab passes he was throwing to them and stuff. But again, he said in his the interview that is up on Hornets 24/7 after the game, he's never played point guard.
Right.
This is his first game as a point guard. And if that's what he's going to do, in his first game as a point guard, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, I've always made the Monte Ellis comparison, but Monte Ellis is never as willing as Rivers seems to be. I have no doubt. He might never translate and have the skills that he wants to have, but I have no doubt that, you know, he's gonna play within the coach's system and try his best to be what his coaches ask him to be. You don't, you know, see that kind of renegade, I'm going to do what I want, this kind of, you know, narrative that was spread specifically, seems like, by just one reporter on ESPN in the week heading up to the draft of he's going to be a hard kid to coach and, you know, he's going to do what he wants and thinks he's Kobe Bryant. You know, I don't get any kind of fee. I mean, he's doing a great job in interviews and just the way he carries himself, if that's who he truly is underneath it.
Right. So I just wanted to give you my take on Austin Rivers from that game. And you tell me what you think. And I'm purposely, I went to that game and I try to reset my mindset. Like I've never seen Austin Rivers play. I don't know any stats. Don't know anything about him. What would my take on Austin Rivers be from that game? There are some things you could pick apart. Like he got like, what, I think two offensive charges, or was it three?
Yeah, he had four turnovers and two of them were offensive charges, which, and I'm not trying to be biased here, but those are if he was a star, those were 50-50s.
Okay.
I don't think anybody will say those were definite charges. Those were 50-50s. But
so I am not upset with those plays whatsoever.
Right.
He's adjusting to a new speed game, a new game of speed. I mean, he's playing against all men who are better athletes. And even in summer league, these are still the guys who are they're actual professionals. So you expect him to be making those kind of mistakes early on when you're a ball handler, because people are going to beat you to a spot just that little bit faster. You'll adjust to that, as any guard will have to do that. There's no problem. And Chris Paul drew charges in his first season all the time.
Right.
Or didn't draw charges, you know, committed charges. So I'm fine with those. I loved when he went determinedly towards the basket. He was very good at that. And a few of those shots, you can tell he's not used to being hit as hard as he is.
Right.
Or to be contested as hard as he is. And again, those are things that he will learn to adjust. He has got, like you said, extremely good handle on the ball. He can move around guys as well as anyone I've seen of his size. He's not explosive, but you don't have to be explosive in the NBA. Chris Paul isn't close to explosive. I'm not saying he's ever be as good as Chris Paul, but he has skills that can make him get open and create space. However, there were four times in that game where I said, no, because they were just terrible shots. I mean, he had, like, there was three that he just jacked up from 4 feet beyond the three-point line. Maybe you could do that in college when that means you're just shooting an NBA three, but you don't do that in the NBA. I mean, Marco Bellinelli used to do that every once in a while for us, and he was actually pretty good at hitting it, but he was always set. He received the ball. It was in rhythm. He was doing, you know, crossovers between his legs and then jacking up a three. Those were terrible shots, and they need to be eliminated entirely. But if you look at that, if you take away those shots, he had a good game. I mean, I thought he played pretty well otherwise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that if someone can get him to cut back on those shots, I think Austin Rivers, as long as he keeps working on his shooting, will be a valuable NBA player.
And see, to me, if he's doing that in November, I've got a problem with it. But he's got Darno Planinic, B. Rock. I'm looking at the box score now. I don't know these guys' first names.
Look, I don't. I'm going to cut you off here. I don't care who he's playing with. Pulling up with 15 seconds on the shot clock to jack up a three from that far away is a bad shot.
Yeah, see, I mean, watching the first quarter of that game, I saw him, there was a beautiful play. So he hits that first three, and then on the next possession, he splits a double team and kicks it open to a wide open, I think it was Lance Thomas, for a 12-footer. He bricks that. He does the same thing a little later, kicks it to Miller for three, who just doesn't pull the trigger on a wide open three. I guess my point is, yeah, I agree he took bad shots last night, but if he's doing that when he's on the floor with Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and Anthony Davis, then I'll know that it's unrepairable. My thinking has always been that Rivers, you know, does it because he doesn't really have to defer to anybody else. And, you know, I just think he will when he's on the court with talent. So I'll reserve on that.
And actually, I mean, I won't even disagree. I think last night he was actually deferring to Henry fairly frequently. And, I mean, that's comforting to see. I mean, what I watched last night was a little disappointing in the final outcome. But in general, I thought it was a fine opening game.
Yeah, so, I had a bar a little higher, so there was a couple of things that bothered me. One was, he definitely has to put on weight for the reason you said about finishing around the basket, but He was, and this happens to 95% of rookies, but when he runs into a pick, he just gets stuck there.
Yes, which I there was one where he was just like, he hit the guy, and the guy he was supposed to be guarding ran off, and he just stood there leaning against the setter, reaching with one hand.
Yeah,
like, please come back.
It was like it looked exactly like when the zombie gets its arm in the door, and can't, and the person's closing it, and it's like trying to reach but can't move forward. But yeah, that happened to him a couple times where he just couldn't get through the screens on the defensive end, and he just needs to put on a little more weight. To me, the most concerning thing was just his free throw stance. What I've always been taught about shooting free throws is that you need a balance, and that bad free throw shooters shoot free throws with their arms. Good free throw shooters, it's a full body motion. Rivers has his left foot back probably like a foot and a half behind his right foot. And when you do that, it's just so much harder to use your whole body in the free throw motion. I fully expect that to be changed because his actual form isn't horrible. His setup to me is one of the worst that I've ever seen. So that was a little bit concerning to me, but my biggest thing in the plus column, and this is always my problem with stats. I know I tease you a lot about stats. I like stats too. What I think is unfair about statistics is we cherry pick which ones that we either keep track of or use, and then we just ignore other things that I think are hugely important in the NBA game. So to me, what I was doing last night when I started seeing it kind of tally up is I was counting how many fouls he drew on Portland last night. And by the end of the night, he had drawn 11 fouls. So he got 10 free throws. So obviously those were, you know, five times he got fouled. But throughout the course of the game, whether it was, you know, just getting by his guy and getting bumped or getting fouled, you know, driving to the basket or whatever, he had drawn 11 personal fouls on the Portland Trailblazers. And I don't know why that's not a stat, because to me, that's huge. If this is where I've always thought that Austin Rivers is better than Terrence Jones. So if Terrence Ross shoots 45% this year and Austin Rivers shoots 40, that means that over the course of 20 shots, Terrence Ross is going to make one more shot, right?
Right.
I did the math right there. Okay.
You're good math.
Okay. But you know, in that same amount of time, not only is Austin Rivers going to get to the line more, but if he draws, you know, two, three more fouls a game and gets me into the penalty faster, and not only gets me into the penalty to make free throws, but gets the other team in foul trouble, I just don't know why this isn't kept as a statistic. And if I'm a coach of the Hornets, the biggest thing that I walk away from last night's game was as a positive was Austin Rivers drew 11 fouls on the opposing team.
All right. No, I can't disagree with that. And even if he's playing, I'm not even going to get into whether he's playing next to Gordon or in relief of Gordon. Just having, think of it that way, Gordon and Austin Rivers, they're subbing for one another. You have 48 minutes of somebody always attacking and drawing fouls.
Yeah.
That last year, other than Xavier Henry, in our regular rotation throughout the whole year, what, Landry was the only other person who could draw a foul? I mean, Kamen, centers are supposed to draw fouls like crazy, and Kamen averaged 2 a game.
And that's the dirty little secret of the champions of the NBA. People talk about the Heat and Oklahoma City Thunder and all this athleticism they have. Those teams live at the line, and Oklahoma City converts. Dallas, for the last 10 years, including their championship year, you know, just they would convert at 77-78% from the free throw line. And that's where, I mean, if you're going to win a game by 3 points, you know, when things start getting tight, the free throw line is such a huge part of it. And now you've got Rivers and Gordon who are, you know, two guys who always attack, who create fouls and either send themselves to the line or get their team closer to the bonus. And now Dell has gone out and got, from my money, the best big man free throw shooter in the league in Ryan Anderson. And Anthony Davis is a guy that projects as a 75 to 80% free throw shooter. I mean, who's a bad free throw shooter on this team? I guess Xavier Henry on last year's numbers. But he's not going to be on the court that much anyway. I mean, this is a team that should be getting into bonuses early in quarters and, you know, having guys who could convert on those free throws.
Yeah. So we've talked about Anthony, about Austin a bunch here. We should probably address a couple of the players that were on the court last night for the Hornets. Miller, did you see anything there that was promising?
I mean, he had three steals. He was active defensively. He's, you know, going to be a guy that just a lot like Quincy Pondexter. He's kind of, you know, not existent on the offensive end. He'll probably have a couple games a year where he hits some shots when teams leave him open, that you'll say, wow, and then you'll start to hope that he has potential to become a scorer in the league, but he never will be. But I guess I don't mind a hustle, defensive-minded player, 8 to 12 minutes a game as my backup small forward, but I don't see anything better than that. You?
No. I mean, people will look at the 1 of 5 shooting and act like it was some horrible thing. He made a couple stupid decisions. But, you know, this is summer league. Things are going pretty fast and your teams haven't been working that well together. So, I mean, we'll give him more time. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up being like, you know, the Rasul Butler kind of player. Better than Rasul Butler, hopefully. But, you know, a guy who will stick around as a small forward. Back up for a while.
And as a mid-second round pick, you're talking about a 2-3 year contract for the minimum. So,
exactly.
No, it's not hurting you. But you did say you'd like Darrell Wright. I mean, if you had the chance, would you have taken Jack for Wright and perhaps sacrificed minutes for Miller and Aminu to have a better player? Or do you like the way the Jack trade worked out?
I don't particularly care for the Jack. It's like almost neutral to me, the Jack trade. I mean, he's not part of the future, so I don't care if he's gone now.
No.
Start figuring out what to replace him with.
I mean, for Darrell Wright, would you?
For Darrell Wright, I would like to have Darrell Wright. I think Darrell Wright, he's a young player. I mean, he's been in the league forever, but he's like 25.
So
he's a young player, and he's a night. So here's the one glaring gap this Hornets team has, and they haven't addressed it with anybody. There isn't a single person on this team other than Ryan Anderson, who it's kind of a weird way to address it. Doing it with your power forward. There are no shooters on this team.
Oh, I know. I've been crying for Jody Meeks to be signed for days now.
Right. There is not a single person on this team who would take a three other than Ryan Anderson, and I would feel any sort of confidence it was going in. So, you know, that's kind of why I like Darrell Wright. He's already proven to be a knockdown three shooter. He's pretty athletic. So he would be a nice addition on the wing, just to have something different. I love the slashers. Having Rivers and Gordon and Henry, those guys are really important to your team to be able to get into the foul trouble. But you got to at least have somebody every once in a while who can knock down a three.
Yeah. All right. Another guy. The Hornets passed on Elton Brand, Luis Scola. You know, a couple of legitimate power forwards in the amnesty process this week. Lance Thomas is a guy that Monty continues to talk up. He actually led the team in minutes in this game. He's put on close to 20 pounds of muscle. Gets a
sure he has.
Well, that's what he told Joe.
Right.
put up a double double in this game. Hit his free throws. Can he be our fourth? I mean, as of right now, he would be the fourth big on the Hornets. Do you expect him to make this team and play significant minutes?
I expect him to make this team. I am hoping he will not be playing significant minutes. Like, I know there are people who love Lance Thomas, and I love the effort that Lance Thomas gives out there. I don't know there are players all the time that the Hornets get who have this kind of energy. You know, there is Jackson Vrooman. There was, Ryan, can't believe I'm forgetting his last name. Oh boy. But anyway,
Ryan Bowen.
Yeah. Ryan Bowen. Thank you very much. Ryan Bowen. You can get players of his type. But he's still, I mean, even in that game, I didn't look at the floor and think, wow, he's like dominating these young kids. He had a lot of energy, but he was still being tossed around by Leonard without any trouble whatsoever. He had trouble, covering Babbitt. Now, Babbitt's a fine player, but if you're going to struggle covering Babbitt, I mean, we've got an issue. I don't think Lance Thomas is anything more than a fifth big man. And I wouldn't even give him the coveted title of elite fifth big man. So I'm sorry for all you people who love Lance Thomas, which obviously includes, Krzyzewski, because they brought him on for the select team.
Yeah. If this is a rebuilding year, if this is a year that you don't mind being in the lottery and you don't want a veteran to be stealing minutes from, Smith, Anderson, or Anthony Davis, I guess bring Lance Thomas in and let him fight with Bowles for that fourth big position.
So I will say that we were mocking Bowles pretty viciously, but let's say he has not even necessarily like last night, but he has another two or three reasonable games. I have no question that he could easily be someone like Darryl Watkins from last year.
Yeah.
Someone who's the fifth big man who just comes in and plays a couple minutes.
Problem with that. If he became our DJ Banga from a couple years ago, seriously, to me, that's a steal because these summer league invites, teams don't expect anything. If they get a 11th or 12th man, they're happy. I'm just laughing because I've seen people already today say that Bowles could be an Al Jefferson with better defense or a Zach Randolph. I am not joking.
Right.
So that's my thing. Now we'll bring, I know, try to contain yourself.
He played in the Philippines last year, people.
Yeah. But he did have one of the most impressive game sevens, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I read.
That changed my take on him.
So we'll get to a guy who I guess it'll the terminology the Twitter sphere uses is hating, that I was hating on last night in Xavier Henry. My point to clarify it is he's the it's really weird, but the teams have to decide by October 31st whether they want to pick up fourth year options on rookies before the season actually really starts. The Hornets are going to have a decision of whether or not they want to pick up a fourth-year option on Xavier Henry at $3.2 million for the following year. Based on what I've seen and know, not just in the summer league game, but at the end of last year, I just can't fathom a world in which the Hornets use up $3.2 million on cap space on Xavier Henry. I mean, could you? I even argued a couple podcasts ago that if they had to do it all over again, they wouldn't have picked up the option on him this year and would, they could get Jody Meeks for less than they're paying him right now. Do you see something different in Henry than I do? Do you think that he still possibly could be a long-term piece, or do you think one way or the other he's gone by the end of this year at the latest?
His basketball IQ has to improve dramatically for him to stick around. And that's like his one giant issue. He basically receives the ball, and makes the decision as it touches his hands, maybe probably even before it touches his hands, I am doing X, and it doesn't matter what else is happening on the floor. He is doing that. He drives to the basket, and halfway there, everybody watching knows this isn't going to turn out well. And he gets bailed out with free throws sometimes, and sometimes he doesn't. Last night it was more often that he didn't, and he kept getting charges. He still got 8 free throws. So, I like his aggression, but he's got to learn when things are developing and he needs to take that mid-range shot. So last year my thing with Xavier Henry was I've never seen a person more desperately in need of the ability to go to his right than Xavier Henry. And he actually did pick that up. He still prefers the left, but he can go right. This year, and if he does this, maybe he'll become somewhat useful. I have never seen a person more in need of a pull-up mid-range jumper than Xavier Henry. Because then, if things are closing off in the middle, rather than force it and hope for the foul, pop that 15 footer, and if he can hit it, then he's not awful.
Yeah.
Whether that develops or not, whether he's going to get the time to develop that or not, I mean, because that's something you got to be able to do in games. I don't know if he's going to get that time, and if he doesn't develop that, then there's no way. I agree 100%. He will not be brought back next year.
Yeah, and I mean, again, 3.2 million sounds like peanuts, but I mean that's eating up your cap space. And if you look at this free agent market right now, I could find you 10, you know, shooting guards who have done way more in the league than Xavier Henry, who are going to be begging for a minimum contract over these next couple months.
Right.
It's just it's just not a good price point. So.
And again, you're saying it's peanuts, but let's just get to the salary cap thing right here. So next year, and this is something people keep talking about, I mean, him being on or off our cap, if we don't sign any more long-term deals or any more deals that will last through next year, which I don't actually expect us to. I mean, maybe some unguaranteed contracts with some young players. But if Xavier Henry's on, if they pick up his option for next year, it's the difference between having essentially barely enough cap space to sign an Eric Gordon kind of max contract, the young max contract, and one that's worth $15
million. Yeah.
And if you look around the league, people who are accepting $15 million contracts, I mean, LeBron James is in there. Dwayne Wade's in there. They could have gotten more, and I'm not saying people are going to give us a discount because we're New Orleans Hornets, but you can get people at really close to max with that who are really good. Probably not Chris Paul, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that you got to look at is that 3.2, and even if you don't want to think of it that way, go out and sign, I think you said on Twitter, you go after Harden or Ibaka with that much money. And if you've also taken out the 3.2 for Xavier Henry, you could still sign a decent veteran.
Right, or you could go after two Ryan Anderson-type contracts or, you know, take some money off of somebody else. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it just, again, it doesn't make sense. If you're going to pay that guy triple the league minimum, you got to be telling me that he definitely does, you know, something that nobody at the league minimum could do. He's, you know, a necessary part of this team, and I can't possibly see it.
Right, and I mean, a perfect example, like you said before, there are a lot of guys, so I'm sure some people are out there, you know, still unconvinced. Who would you rather have on our team right now? Salaries don't matter. Ronnie Brewer, Xavier Henry.
Right, and Ronnie Brewer's about to sign for the men.
Right. Yeah. Jody Meeks, like you just said. I mean,
yeah.
Aaron Brooks and he had a season where he averaged 18 points a game.
Right.
He can only make as much as Xavier Henry is going to make.
Exactly. And this is again where people just and it's not just with basketball players. It's a fad that we all do, just as human beings, where we value our own objects more than we do anything else. But if you step back, if Xavier Henry was on another team, you would have absolutely no interest in him. And it's just at some point, it's just time to let go.
So we got one more person we got to mention. I know you were going to try to get away without doing it.
Ugh.
Dyson, did he move the needle for you?
2 points,
2 rebounds, and assist.
I mean, he could be my fifth. He definitely has that ability to see the court that I would like Austin Rivers to develop.
Yeah.
If I could do a face off, but only with eyes, I would take Dyson's eyes and put them in Rivers' head.
Apparently some guy named Freeman played for us too. Did you even notice a Freeman out there? I didn't.
Well, see, I'm a big Georgetown fan, and Austin Freeman was a fairly big part of the Georgetown team a couple of years ago. So yeah, I was actually looking for him out there, and he looked just as horrible as I remember from the Georgetown days. Nothing improved. Great. But yeah, Dyson, you know, I wouldn't mind him as a fifth guard on this team. What does scare me though is if something happens and the Hornets are trying to tank again next year, Dyson might throw a monkey wrench in that.
You think he's too good to tank with?
He's too. When you give him a lot of minutes, he's one of those guys that has the potential to just go off for 20 points at a random night and blow up the tank. So that's the only part of his game that scares me. But no, I mean, he was able to get into the lane a couple of times and dish to some bigs down low. So, you know, it really depends. I mean, it's been odd because Dell has been talking about going this young vet route, but he and Monty have both said that they also want some veterans on the team to kind of give that presence. And that's why I was shocked. I mean, I don't think there's going to be three better contracts value wise in the league this year than Elton Brand at $2.1 million for Dell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you're not trying to make the playoffs this year, the fact that you would have Anthony Davis covering Elton Brand in practice as opposed to, I mean, he's probably going to be covering Jason Smith or Lance Thomas every day in practice. You know, and people think that's not a big thing, but you practice as many days as you play. And, you know, if Anthony Davis had to go against a Wiley veteran every day in practice, I'm of the belief that it's going to help him more than having to cover Lance Thomas. But, you know, that was kind of surprising for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the price point that Elton Brand goes at, I'm not actually that surprised. I really feel that they're going all young and they're just going to see what sticks. And I think they want to have enough minutes to develop someone. And when you bring in someone like Elton Brand, he's going to expect, you know, at least 24 minutes a game. At least, probably more than
that. But who cares what he expects? I mean, he's getting, and this is the thing, and there was a lot of rumors out there that all teams didn't put in a bid because Elton Brand would have been unhappy. First of all, Elton Brand's going to show up to your camp because if he doesn't, he's not getting $18 million. So he's going to show up and he's going to be there. I guess if you...
But why deal with that? Why deal with someone who might be unhappy?
I mean, we're doing it already. You know, I don't buy it. I think that's a narrative that people, you know, create, and it's just fear-based. I think guys show up there. They like hanging out with other guys in the locker room. It's not all as serious as everybody makes it out to be, where Elton Brand's going home every night sulking. I guess I don't factor that in. You know, if I'm going to pay a guy $2.1 million, if I think he's, you know, going to be good for my team and developing my young guys, you know, I don't care what team he wants to go to. But,
well, I mean, here's why I don't have any problem with him not bringing an Elton Brand. There are 72 minutes worth of big man time every game. And we have three young guys. All of them deserve their time.
72?
Yeah, two position. Oh, what the? My numbers are bad. 40, so 90, 96. Wow. That's depressing. So I got to 72 because I was thinking, two guys, 36 minutes of 72. I don't know. Which basically means if you want two guys playing about starter minutes, which I'm assuming Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis should be doing, you've only got 24 minutes left. Jason Smith deserves those 24 minutes.
Okay.
So bring in Elton Brand, you take away another 24 minutes, somebody's not getting the minutes I think they deserve.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, unless you can play them all together, you're also going to have injuries. I mean, the odds that all of those guys play all 82 games. But I just, you know, I agree. It's not the end of the world. I do think that the Hornets could have made a playoff push if they really wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
This year.
But it wouldn't be a sustainable playoff push, really.
No, but
you're not going to be able to continue to get these cheap veterans on these crazy deals.
Well, I don't know about that. I think once you get there, I mean, they didn't choose the right ones, in my opinion, but the Clippers just reloaded on a bunch of veterans, you know, at good deals, even though they were up against the cap. So, all right. Mm-hmm. So I guess last thing is,
Don't you want to talk about Phoenix winning Luis Scola? Because you, first time there, I thought you felt like the Hornets were going to get Luis Scola.
No, I mean, I think it would have been hilarious to do, just because there are still some ridiculous people out there who think that, you know, David Stern made the wrong trade for Chris Paul. And it's hilarious now that Odom has been sold basically for the candy that he eats. You know, who else was in that trade? Scola has been amnestied, so his team paid him not to play.
Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin could be had for, I mean, a team with cap space could probably take him and give nothing back. And then Goran Dragic goes and gets overpaid, yet people still think that's the trade that the Hornets should have taken. But
I want to say this really quick, because you brought this up with Eric Gordon about how I said that he'd be absolutely insane to want to go to Phoenix. That is still a 100% true statement. Phoenix is dumb. The people running Phoenix are dumb. I mean, yeah, they're excited. They were like during the summer league, they were reporting how like all of them were all excited because they managed to get Luis Scola for 3 years. Luis Scola was declining desperately last year. He's over 30, and they just signed Beasley to be their power forward? I mean, basically, they're turning into the Timberwolves from last year, but they don't have any sort of future. It's like old Timberwolves from last year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's I
would be willing to say right now that the Hornets will have a better record than Phoenix next.
No, week. I was gonna do in the next podcast we were gonna do who had the best teams and worst off seasons.
Sorry, we'll wait.
For me, my answer would have been Phoenix and Philadelphia. But okay, so as we get to the end here, we hear this narrative coming from free agents, from draft picks, where they say that, you know, they've had nice long talks with Dell and Monty Williams, apparently everybody but Eric Gordon. But we we hear them say that they've talked to these guys and that, you know, they're really excited about the Hornets' plan, that it's a very, you know, the future looks bright, the plan sounds great, they're really excited to be a part of this team. We've seen them match Eric Gordon. We've seen them trade out all their vets, you know, just stack up on young guys. They brought in Ryan Anderson as their big free agent acquisition. If you kind of had to guess seeing this, what this plan looks like as far as what kind of teams are they trying to model themselves after, you know, from the past and present, or just what the philosophies are of what this team is going to look like when it all comes together. You know, what do you see this plan as being as far as what kind of product they're going to want to put on the court?
So, and I've kind of said OKC and other things in the past. I actually, and this isn't surprising at all, I actually believe 100% that they are following the San Antonio model. And the San Antonio model really was, we have our one superstar. We're going to try to grab another couple through the draft, identify who those superstars are in the draft and get them. And then it doesn't matter what we surround them with. We're just going to keep revolving in young, capable guys as much as possible. And we're going to cut loose people without any sort of sentimentality at all, and replace them very easily. And that's what they've done for 10 straight years. They've cycled through supporting players like crazy in San Antonio and just built around those three guys. So I think the Hornets are hoping right now that their three guys will end up being Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, and Austin Rivers.
Not Eric Gordon?
And Eric Gordon. But I'm not sure how, if he actually plays fully into their plans or not.
And then how about, so we saw the Spurs, if you're looking at that model, kind of switch from a, you know, defensive, slow the game down type of mentality. You know, on the offensive, defensive end of the court, they, you know, kind of shifted in the past couple of years to more up-tempo, more offensive team. What about, you know, specific, I mean, Dell went out and got the best shooter on the market. He went out and drafted, you know, at number one was a no-brainer, but at number 10, he specifically said he wanted a guy who could have the ball in his hand at the end of games and who could create his own shot. I mean, what is if Dell could put all his ideal pieces together, I guess if it's those four, what would be his ideal fifth and, you know, maybe even sixth piece to add to this nucleus before surrounding it with
with role players?
Honestly, I mean, I think he's probably where he wants to be with the nucleus. I mean, he's got to see if Austin turns into anything. But you want a big three. That's what the NBA model is set up for you to afford three primary big money players. Ryan Anderson fits into that as a reasonably third priced person. Eric Gordon is now one of our max players. Anthony Davis will be one of our max players. I'm assuming he hopes Austin Rivers ends up being, you know, one of those guys you can fit in at $5 or $6 million, and then the rest of them will just be bit players. But if you go and review various, you know, statistical analysis, something like 75% of wins on average comes from your top three players. The NBA doesn't usually have a lot of teams that have more than three players. The teams that are like that was Dallas when they won last year. It was Portland back when they were going against the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
It was Detroit. And the one thing you'll see that recurs among all those teams paid a lot of money for those guys. And it is better for you to pay one guy $15 million than two guys $22 million. Which is what ends up happening for those teams. It's easier to do that, unless you're going to absorb a lot of salary. So I actually think that Dell is probably right now hoping he's where he needs to be. And he just has to let these guys develop and then fill in around them once he figures out what their actual skill set entails on the floor. Because looking at this team, I have no idea what kind of team it is. I mean, it's not one you can classify as an up-tempo team. Or a half-court team. I think it could be capable either way. So, I don't know. Do you look at this team and think, this is the next piece of the puzzle? Maybe I should be thinking that way, but I'm not.
Well, yeah, I mean, but we just talked about how they could have 16, 17, 18 million in cap room next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, to me, that's the move to go out and to get another piece.
That's a hedge. I mean, it's a hedge right now. So, let's say Eric Gordon gets injured or Austin Rivers turns out to be horrible. I mean, you have a hedge that you can continue to do the flexibility, move people out, move people in. You got to have the flexibility and money to be able to do that. And let's say all four pieces work out wonderfully. Well, then you can add a fifth piece. But you gotta have that ability to handle risk for you to be able to build a basketball team. Because, I mean, you got to remember back when the Spurs were building their dynasty, Tony Parker was splitting time with I think it was Jacques Vaughn for like 3 years. It took a long time before Parker was trusted enough by Pop to play more than 26 minutes a game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a lot of what's going to happen with Rivers the first couple of years. Again, a really young guy. So we'll see. I don't know. I really think, when I think about the fifth piece, and again, I think you're confident. If I had to guess on a confidence meter from you, as far as if the question was, could each of these guys be one of the big four, your ranking would probably go Davis as a definite yes, he will be a big component. Davis, Anderson, Gordon, Rivers, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think I have a little more faith in Rivers than you, so I mean...
You're going to put him over Gordon?
Well, again, because I'm the type of person who thinks staying healthy is a skill, not...
Right.
So, but if you could tell me Gordon's going to be healthy, then no, he's number two on that list for me. But when I look at those four, I actually do see a lot of pieces that fit really nicely together. And when I think about the fifth guy I would want there, it would be a perimeter defender who could rebound well at the small forward position, and that's Al-Farouq Aminu, but he's got to be able to hit that corner three. So basically mm-hmm. Bruce Bowen, but with the ability to rebound. And, I think everybody says, well, he could be that. In my opinion, there's been 30,000 guys who have passed through the NBA that could have been Bruce Bowen.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have too much pride not to do it.
Right.
You know, and so could he be? Yeah.
But I've seen more guys just not go hard on the defensive end than I've seen ones that try to dedicate themselves to becoming the next Bruce Bowen.
Yeah, I mean, if I don't have a lot of faith that Al Farouk's going to develop, even with my piece earlier talking about him being better than Ariza. But you're right. I mean, his physical profile and potential skill set is exactly something we could use.
Yeah. Like, if we were to trade Al Farouk Aminu for Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
I would be firmly on board that this team could be a, you know, nearing contender status in 3 years.
Right. So, I mean, I think our team right now, if you just in a vacuum, take the starting five, it looks pretty nice. I mean, if you take Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, Al Farouk Aminu, Eric Gordon, Grievous Vasquez, with Austin Rivers and Jason Smith coming off at the bench as the primary third guard and the primary third big man, that's actually a team that could develop into something pretty spectacular. But again, I think it's going to have to take some time.
Yeah.
And you got to have a little more depth than that too.
Exactly. Yeah. This team, if it, you know, could get 95% of its possible game played by the starters, I think could be, you know, competing for an eighth seed, but you know that there's going to be a couple of injuries throughout the year. And when you're talking about, you know, dropping from Eric Gordon to Xavier Henry in the starting lineup, or, you know, if Darius Miller is going to have to start some games, or, you know, whatever, it's going to be tough.
Our Bulls will come in and dominate.
And Hassan Whiteside is now a free agent, a guy that
no
love.
No, thank you. All right, before we get too stupid, we're going to move on and I think pull this to a close. So, again, please, if you can go to that blog post, click on that survey. It's 7 things. It'll take you all of, like, you know, 5 minutes to do. Please do that for us, and I promise you I will continue to pester you in every podcast until we get all the ones that we need so we can do this. So might as well just get the pain over quickly. Got anything else, Michael?
That's it. Just looking for Summer League game number 2 tonight.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. Have a good night. Ain't nothing but a party.